I hope everyone has the source sheet. Okay, we're good? All right. So this is, God willing, the first of two on the topic of Tohanin L'Yoresh, Tohanin L'Lokeach, the idea that a Beis Din will make claims on behalf of an heir or on behalf of a purchaser of property. In the context of our Gemara, it comes up specifically when they need to make a claim related to the predecessor on that property, the person who gave them the property, the person who sold them the property, the person who bequeathed them the property, and they don't make the claim, and Beis Din is going to do it on their behalf, but we'll talk about that. The truth of the matter is that this sugya is not so much a Shechinim sugya. It comes up on Daf Chaf Gimel, as we're going to see, but it's really a broader Bava Basra sugya. We're going to see a lot of different cases from around the Masechta, and the truth is that there are more that we could have brought. And it affords us an opportunity to expand beyond the basic Shechinim narratives that we've been seeing. At its core, the following is the issue of Ta'aninan, of making claims on behalf of litigants. Normally, we assume judges are neutral parties, and we go to great lengths to try to ensure that they will be neutral parties. So in order to prevent bribery, for example, if you take a look at the first source, I brought you the classic Gemara Ksuvos Daf Kuf Hei, which talks about shochad devarim, avoiding, so to speak, verbal bribery. And the Gemara gives us three stories, one involving Shmuel, who was crossing a river, and somebody gave him a hand. And he says, what are you doing here? And the guy says, actually, I have a case to hear. And he said, well, I can't judge because you gave me a hand crossing the river. That's why I say verbal bribery, so to speak. It's not really verbal. It's giving a hand. But it means as opposed to financial bribery, which is the traditional one that people think of. And then you have a Meimar with the feather on his head, and you have Mar Ukva and the fellow covering up the saliva. You know, things that people do that might bias the judge raise concerns for us. In truth, poskim say that what you see in Ksuvos in this daf is actually a chumrah. In other words, it wasn't that they were actually disqualified because of this relationship, but the point is we do go to extremes. We also take steps to prevent the litigants from feeling like the other litigant has the upper hand. So, as an example of that, I brought you the Gemara in Ksuvos daf Pei Vav Amud Aleph, source Beis, on the sheet, which we're going to come back to hopefully later on in the shiur. Kravsei de Rav Nachman Zavinta L'Ksuvasa B'Tovas Hana'a. Rav Nachman has a female relative who sells an option on her ksuba. Right? This is apparently something that people did, raise a little extra income. There is a payment that may be coming to her in the future in the event of a divorce or in the event that her husband predeceases her. So somebody says, listen, I'll pay you right now for the rights to collect the ksuba if the ksuba ever comes due. So he's not going to pay her the full amount of the ksuba, but he'll pay her something for it. The ksuba was worth $1,000, so he'll pay her whatever, you know, you have to get an actuary involved in order to figure out what the likelihood is of death or divorce, and then figure out what it's worth to pay for it now. So Igrisha, then, this woman was divorced, Vishushchiva, and then the woman died before claiming the ksuba. So asuka tavi la labrata. So people came along and said, you know, we bought the rights to the ksuba from this woman. They came to the daughter and said, we would like to claim the ksuba from the daughter. Amar lahu Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman says to the general audience, leka delispala etza. Will no one give her advice? What she should do is forgive her mother's ksuva claim on her father. She, as a yoresh, has the ability to forgive the claim for the ksuba from the father, and therefore, she will then, when the father passes away, inherit the ksuba money from the father. Wouldn't it be great if she did this strategy? Don't get hung up on the strategy in the case that is not germane for us. The point is, Rav Nachman says, wouldn't it be great if she did this for his relative? Azla achilta, and sure enough, she did. So Amar Rav Nachman, asinu atzmenu ka'orchei hadayanim. We have made ourselves like Orchei HaDayanim today. Orech Din is a term that we use for a lawyer. We may discuss in the second shiur the origin of lawyers in Batei Din and the nature of it and how that connects with some of the things we're discussing today. We'll see. But right there you see the term that we use. We have made ourselves like Orchei HaDayanim. Meikara my suffer l'besof my suffer. So he says, he seems to be upset that he did that. He seems to think he did the wrong thing. So why did he do it in the first place? How did he change his mind? Initially he thought, I have a duty to my relative. I have to make sure to do this on behalf of my relative. And then he said, yeah, but you know what? I am somebody of standing, and this could make people believe that I am not fair. Or could lead them to deduce the wrong lessons and apply this incorrectly. So therefore, what I did was wrong. Now, in his case, you could say his concern is about the general public. However, look at the Rambam, please, in Source Gimel, where the Rambam codifies for us how you're supposed to proceed in Beis Din. Mitzvas asay, lishpot hashofei betzedek. A judge has a mitzvah of judging honestly. That's only a mitzvah asay. No. You have a mitzvah asay to judge righteously. Shnera betzedek tishpot hamisecha. Ezu tzedek hamishpot. What exactly does that mean? Zo hashvaya shnei balei din b'chol davar. This is an equation of the two litigants in all matters. You can't let one guy speak as much as he wants and cut off the other litigant. You can't show favor to one guy and be a nice guy and talk to him gently, and then the other guy, you speak to him harshly. It's how you relate to the litigants. You have to make sure that you're even-handed. And you know the Gemaras in the beginning of Sanhedrin that talk about this also, how the litigants are dressed when they come to Beis Din and so on. The Orach HaShulchan in Source Dalet writes, V'chein aser lahader p'nei gadol, you are not allowed to show honor to the great. Shimbo lefanav asher v'chacham im ani v'hedyot. If you have someone who is wealthy or a scholar and he shows up in Beis Din opposite somebody who is impoverished and not a scholar, lo yechabdenu yosei mashemachuyo b'din tarif lo yishol b'shlomo. Don't treat him with any greater respect than the Torah obligates. Don't ask after his welfare. Shlo yistamu divrei baldino, because you could end up preventing the other fellow from making a claim. And in general, this is summed up, or not this is summed up, it's not true, but in general we say, the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos in Source, hey, al tas atzmecha ko'orchei hadayanim, just like Rav Nachman said, hey, we made ourselves like the lawyers, the Mishnah says, don't do that, and Rashi says, shimbalacha adam echad v'yishal etzim imcha, somebody comes to ask you for advice, hey, achiochaliton al chavero, how could he make a claim against the next guy? Al tomer lo shum etzah lilmod osaliton al chavero, don't teach him how to do it. Now, that's when you are a judge in the case. It doesn't mean you can never do it, but that's actually a discussion. Maybe we'll do that in the second shiur also. It's actually a fun discussion. How much is this really addressed only to a judge in the Beis Din, or is this in general you're not supposed to be involved in other people's battles? So maybe we'll come back to that in part two. We'll have to see. So what I tried to build for you in the last 7 minutes is an awareness that we really don't want our judges to favor one side over the other, to have the appearance of favoring one side over the other. And the problem is that we are going to see on Chaf Gimel Lamed Aleph that where a lokeach, a purchaser, where a yoresh, an heir, fails to make a claim related to rights that they might have unwittingly purchased or inherited, the Beis Din may make the claim on their behalf. Beis Din can put their thumb on the scale. Where in the world did that come from? How in the world can you do that? So the questions I want to ask specifically are, why do we allow ta'aninan? Won't it violate judicial neutrality? Number two, is the case of the yoresh or the lokeach unique because they are in the dark about the affairs of their predecessor on this property? Or could ta'aninan be used for other kinds of litigants who do have access to the information? And number three, are there limits to what the Beis Din may claim on behalf of a yoresh, a lokeach? What exactly are the parameters? As an example, let's say the yoresh, lokeach, came to Beis Din, made an argument, and didn't make this argument. But they said, this is what the story is, and we'll see a specific case, God willing, we get there. Can the judges say, actually, you meant to say this? This is your argument. What if they actually said something that contradicts what the Beis Din is suggesting that they should say? Then what? Questions like that. Are we clear on where we're going? Questions are understood? Okay? Okay. So.
Oh, that's
yes.
One thing, Rabbi Christian. So it's not that strange, like in secular law, two foods are just have to be impartial and all that. But we know on the one hand, you've given the classes on self-represented litigants.
You bet.
And, but beyond that, there's court-appointed litigation guardians, this and that. So the idea, the concept is there, right?
Yes. So Jeffrey says, for those in the room who couldn't hear, he notes two things. Number one, that in secular law also, judges are not allowed to show favor to a particular party, but there are limitations on that. And he indeed is correct. I think you were there, Jeffrey. I gave a shiur on dealing with self-represented litigants when you are a lawyer, meaning you're the lawyer for one side and the other fellow is representing himself. And there are, even though we say, normally, you know, you work for the person who is employing you, and the judge isn't allowed to show favor, nonetheless, there are ways in which the lawyer is supposed to help the guy on the other side, and the judge is supposed to help the guy who is self-represented to a certain extent. It is true, there are ways, and that will figure into some of our calculus here. I am very happy to plagiarize myself. And then the other point Jeffrey makes is that in a secular system, there are times when the court explicitly helps somebody. They will appoint a guardian. Halacha, we have an apotropos also. But that's really not in the context of a din Torah or mixing into. It's in the interest of society to make sure that people have access to justice, and therefore we will appoint lawyers and the like. Okay. An apotropos is really its own parsha. So, we are, as a general principle, to'ein, we will claim on behalf of a buyer that he received certain rights from the mocher. And that's our Gemara on Daf Chaf Gimel Amud Aleph. Take a look, please, at source Vav. Mishnah says, Marchigen es ha-shovach m'nir ha-chamishim amah. I'm reading this quickly because we've, you know, seen this quite a bit. The doves are gone by now. You distance the dovka from the city 50 amos away. Ask Rav Jared for more information about how the doves travel and all of that. Le'asa adam shovach b'soch shalo, elem ken yesh chamishim amah l'chol ruach. You're not allowed to make a dovka in your property unless you give it a 50 amah radius. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Beis Abbas, Kurin, fine. Vim lekach, the next word is a trick word. Vim lakhu, or lekacho, afilu beis rova, harayu bechezkaso. So there are two different ways to read that line. It's not going to be relevant for the rest of the shiur, but worth noting as you try to read this. Rashi says it's lekacho, meaning if the current owner bought it from someone who has a chazaka, then he is allowed to keep it despite lacking the required distance. That's why Rashi reads this. Whereas Rabbeinu Gershom reads it as lakchu, meaning if multiple people bought this property and then they divided it up, so the one who has the shovach is allowed to keep it even though after they divide it there's less than the required distance to the next property. Two different ways to read this depending on whether you read it as lakachu or lakchu. Too bad there are no vowels. Okay. So that's the Mishnah. So the Gemara says, Amar of Papa, V'itemer of Zvid, Zos Omeres Tonin L'Lokeach, V'Tonin L'Yoresh. Rav Papa / Rav Zvid say, the fact that our Mishnah says, Hareyu Bechez Kaso, you have a chazaka as a buyer, that you're able to keep the Shovach there despite the lack of distance, that shows that we will make a taina on behalf of a buyer, on behalf of an heir. How does our Mishnah show that? How does Harayu Bechez Kaso show that we would make a claim on his behalf? Where did that come from? So Rabbeinu Gershom offers us the following read in Sor Zion. Zos Omeres. Dikatani Hareza Bechez Kaso. The fact that it says he gets to stick to the chazaka that he has on the property. I just jumped the line. Hadetoan and Liorish Lokeach, Shim Amar Adam Achavero Sada Zugazalta Mimeni. Because normally, if Reuven says to Shimon, you stole a field from me, Vala Amar Ani Kanisia Mimcha Ushne Chazaka Achaltia, and Shimon's response is, I bought it off of you, and I've had it for the years of Chazaka, Ein Zaraya. That is not proof of anything. Avalim Amar Abba Hinichali. But if he says, my father left this field for me, Klomar Yoresh Haba Machmas Yerusha, he comes as an heir, Eino Tsarich Taina. He does not need to make an argument to explain how his father got the field. Sheksha'amar Abba Hini Chali, when he says, my father left it to me, Einot Tzarech Lo Yoser Lito, and he doesn't need to make any further claim. Shelo Yachol Hala Lachzer V'lomar Lo Har Eini Shtar Mechira Shekna Avicha. The other fellow can't say, show me your father's bill of purchase that says that he bought the field from my father or from me or whatever it is. Doesn't have to be so. Debased in Tonin and Bishvilo, v'yamru shema avad shtara v'yeteyach lotzia mitachas yado. Bezdin will make the claim on his behalf that his father bought it, and that the shtar that he doesn't have was lost. Bezdin is willing to make that claim on his behalf, and so too with Elokeach, as Rebbeinu Gershom continues. So in other words, the fact that our Mishnah is willing to say, you have the chazaka, without needing a taina, tells me that Bezdin is making the taina on his behalf. That's the way Rebbeinu Gershom reads it. Side note, you might ask, why is there a need for a taina at all? Why isn't this chazkas tashmishin? Right, we have a principle, you own property, you're allowed to use your property in ways that, you know, it's been used classically. Why do you need any sort of a taina to explain? So the Ramban says, because you are harming the other guy with your shovach, financially. He says, if you look at Ches, Vesher Shatam, if Neshayonim Nichnasim Lasoch Shalo, Veino Chayav Lasalek Hezekov Lo Lashalem Veyesh Lo Lazeligdor. He says, because the birds are going to enter this guy, the new guy's property, not new, but the guy who has the shovach, they're gonna enter his property from next door, and he has no obligation to prevent that from happening, and the guy next door is gonna have to build a big wall to keep his birds in. That's why you need a taina. In other words, as Rav David Povarsky says here in the Shur Rabbeinu David, this is not really Chezkas Tashmishin, he's a mazik. And that's why you need a taina. Okay. So Rav Papa / Rav Zvid say that the fact that our Mishnah says Harehu Bechezkaso and it doesn't say anything about needing to make a taina shows that we are going to make a taina on his behalf. So the Gemara asks a question, and this is the sort of question which I feel like Idan probably addressed during Seder, because I don't really understand the following question and answer. Nonetheless, the Gemara says, Yoresh Tanena. I already know this is true for an heir. Haba Mishum Yerusha Eino Tzarech Taina. Right? The person who comes in as a Yoresh doesn't need to make a claim. So the Gemara says, yeah, but Lokeach Istur Chalei. We needed to know that because of Lokeach. So I didn't really understand. Our Mishnah didn't mention Yoresh. Did you discuss this during Seder?
We went crazy in all other areas.
Okay, I don't even know why this was I don't know why this was even the question, right? Except that it allows the Gemara an opportunity to point to Daf Memalef where they talk about Lokeach. But like, who asked you about Lokeach? I don't understand. Yes, Daniel. Are you on the thing? You're saying it as a kavachomer. If lokeach would work, then yoresh would work. But the way we worded the question here is, I already know yoresh, but I would still need lokeach then. If telling me lokeach teaches me also yoresh, then knowing yoresh elsewhere didn't help me because it didn't teach me lokeach. So why would, you see what I'm asking? You see why that doesn't work? It would be the other way around. If Yoresh is greater Chiddush than Lokeach, then you could say to me, I already learned this regarding Yoresh, and therefore you don't need this. But in that case, our answer here wouldn't work. Why? They should have investigated. So let's take your logic. Okay? We'll take the logic that you're offering. That it's a bigger chiddush that we're willing to do this for Lokeach than that we're willing to do this for Yoresh. So I have a Mishnah that's talking about Lokeach, right? Giving me the big chiddush. Then why does the Gemara ask, hey, I already knew that regarding Yoresh? I don't follow. It also doesn't quite fit the wording that the Gemara uses. I just looked at it and I thought, I don't know. I wrote in my notes, I don't know. That's it. I don't have anything else to offer. Okay. So the Gemara then has a second question. Lokeach nami tanena. I also already learned this regarding lokeach from a Mishnah on Dasamach Laman Aleph. The if you buy a yard and there are shelves that stick out of the wall, you get the chazaka, even though those shelves are protruding, and there it's protruding into Rishus Arabim. It's protruding into an area that the public has access to. It's not just a neighbor who's going to be bothered by your dovecut. So it already says you go with a chazaka, and there's no need to do taina. So the Gemara says, Tricha, yeah, but you needed both of these. Each one has its own chiddush to offer. What do you mean? If you only taught me the case on Daf Samach, where it's the public that is affected, so I would have said that the argument could be that the previous resident actually built within his property, and the shelves didn't extend past the property line. That would have been my assumption. Inami, or alternatively, achule achul b'nei rishus harabim gabe, the public was mocha, the public forgave it. Aval hachalo, but I wouldn't make that argument here. In other words, the chiddush of Chav Gimel Amud Aleph is that we are towing, even though the logic for being towing is weak. The logic of being towing there is to say, if this previous guy was able to interfere with the public with his shelves, it has to have been arranged somehow. He wasn't just cheating the public. That can't be. And not only am I willing to make that argument there, I'm even willing to make that argument here, even though you only interfered with the private sector. That's the chiddush of Chav Gimel. And there's a chiddush also the other way. V'yashmin hacha, had you only had the case here, dekeven deyachidhu ema piyuse paise. Since you're only dealing with an individual next door, there's a clear mechanism for dealing with the problem. You talk to your neighbor and you work it out. And the neighbor is mochel, the mechanism is there. The inami achule achle gabe, either you appeased him, you made it right, you paid him something, or he was simply mochel. Aval Rabin, but if you're dealing with the community, man payis u man shavik, who did you appease? How did that work? Who was it who gave their approval of this because you paid him off? Who was it who allowed this to happen? Amalo. So I would have said you can't be towing. So the chiddush is, on Daf Chav Gimel, we are towing even where the logic for being towing is weak. And the chiddush on Daf Samach is we are towing even where the mechanism that you are towing is unlikely. It's less clear that there is such a mechanism for this when you're dealing with Rishus HaRabim. So that's our Gemara. I brought you, with each of the cases that we're going to see, I brought you the Shulchan Aruch as well, so you could see that. So here I brought you, it's in Kufnun Hei, our favorite siman there, Kufnun Hei Chav Dalet in Source Test. I'm not going to read it aloud, it's just there. It paskins like our sugya, it paskins like Daf Samach, that we are towing for the lokeach, that the previous owner made it with Rishus. Whether the neighbors are Yachid, whether the neighbors are Rabim, doesn't make a difference. Clear? We're good? Okay. We also have Daf Ayin Amud Beis. And Daf Ayin Amud Beis is a Yoresh case. We are towing for a Yoresh that his father repaid a debt. The case here is as follows. This is really broad and part of a broader discussion, but it's the only piece of it that we actually need for this shir. Shtar Kis Ayotze Ala Yesomim. Somebody comes to the Yesomim and says, I invested money with your father. Right, I was the investing partner, he was the managing partner. So I invested $1 million with him. Dayone go, and he has a document to prove it. So Dayone Gola Amri Nishba Vagova Kulo. So the Dayone Gola say he swears, and then he can get everything, he gets the full million. Dayone Eretz Yisrael Amri Nishba Vagova Mechza. Dayone Eretz Yisrael say no, you only get 50%. What does that mean? We're following what they say in Neherda, where they said that when you do this investment, the way it works, Stam, is it's 50% loan and 50% money given to you to guard, men of the investment. And we discussed this a few years ago when the Beis Medrash did Ribbis. I'm not going to go into the whole Ribbis discussion now in terms of how this works. But what you're going to be able to do here, and as the Gemara explains, is that the investor is able to claim the loan part, the 50% that was a loan. What about the pikadon part? We're telling on behalf of the heirs, the yorshim, that the father repaid it. Take a look at source Yud Aleph. Nishba v'gova mechza perish de milva. He claims the loan portion. The pikadon pasid. As far as the pikadon, that's lost. Etani and lehu achzirim l'chavia. And we say the father already repaid the 50%. The Shulchan Aruch in Source Yud Beis, it's Choshen Mishpat Kufches, Paskins like us that we are towing for the Yoresh, since the father could have said, Hechezarti. The father could have said, I repaid it. Why is the father credible when he says, I repaid it? Because he could have said, Nenasti. He could have said that somebody came along and grabbed the Pikadon. So since he could say, that it was Nanas, therefore he could claim that he had already returned it. A question that we're going to have to come back to is, why not let the Yorshim claim Nansu? Why not let the Yorshim actually claim the money was Nanas? It won't help them for the Halva'a part. It won't help them for the loan. It only helps for the Pikadon, right? Why doesn't it help for the Halva'a part to say Nanas? Because you still have to pay it back. Correct. It's not about these particular coins. Somebody lends a person money and he leaves the building and somebody robs him and he comes back inside and he says, I'm sorry, I can't pay you back. Somebody just stole it from me. Say to him, that's nice, you're still paying me back. That doesn't work. So the only thing you can get out of is the Pikadon portion. Okay. So that's our second case, and it shows that we're towing for the Yoresh, that the father returned the Pikadon. Third case I wanted to show you is that we are towing for the Lokeach, but the Taina has to live in the real world. The Taina can't be, Nathan, you okay?
Yeah.
Okay. The Taina has to live in the real world. It can't be, even though we said on Daf Chav Gimel that we can make a claim where the logic is weak and we can make a claim where the mechanism is weak, nonetheless, it still has to be somewhat of a real world claim. There was a fellow in a place called Kashta, who lived in the upper floor of the house for 4 years. After 4 years, the guy who actually owns the house decides to go upstairs. I don't know what he's been doing for 4 years, but he hasn't gone upstairs in 4 years. So he goes upstairs with a broom, presumably, and he sees there's somebody living in my house. Amalei, my boy's the high base. He says, what are you doing in my house? Amalei, mi planya zavinta de zavne minach. He says, I don't know what you're doing in my house. I bought it off of so-and-so, who bought it off of you. So he's acknowledging that this guy was the original owner, but I bought it off of somebody who bought it off of you. Get out of my house. Us the kameh de rabbi, I don't know why this guy hasn't come downstairs in 4 years either. That's a separate question. Us the kameh, the answer is he has a ladder, and he goes down via the ladder into the yard. So the case comes to Rabbi Chia. Amar lei islach sahadi the darba ihu de zavnes minei vafilu chad yoma o kim nala biyadach vilolo. Rabbi Chia says you do need to prove that the person you bought it from lived there for a day. That you do need to establish that shows that he was actually an owner, and then you get to keep it. Why don't we say ta'aninan that the mocher bought it off of off of this guy, and you don't need the 1 day of living. Why do I actually need this 1 day of living there? So Ramban explains you need the 1 day of living there because it looks like a lie if he didn't live there at all. He has to have been there somewhat. So Rav is a very savvy real estate man, and Rav says, why do I need 1 day? Amar Rav, havi yisimna kameh dechavivi. He says, I was sitting there in front of my double uncle, right? You know the background on this in the Gemara in the beginning of Psachim, right? Rabbi Chia is an uncle of Rav on both his father's side and his mother's side. The only strange thing about the story is that it doesn't appear in Yevamos. But he's his uncle on his father's side, and he's his uncle on his mother's side. So a regular uncle, is called what in Hebrew? How do you say uncle in Hebrew? Dod. So Dod means beloved. So my double uncle, he's Chavivi. He's really beloved. So the so Rav says, I was sitting in front of Chavivi, the Amri, and I said to him, V'chi ein adam asir likach b'lim kor b'layla. He says, don't people flip houses? What do you mean when you say he has to live there for a day? It could be that one night he bought it and he sold it. V'chazise l'dayte yamale kamoy didi zavne minach mehem en migo dibo yamale anozav inta minach. I did agree with his perspective in general, but because the machzik would be credible if he said the third party bought it from you in front of me, because he could have said I bought it from you. Since he could have said I bought it from you, it's good enough for him to say the third party bought it off of you in front of me. Along comes Rava. And Rava says, Kavasi drabichia mistabra, diktani hacha mishum yirusha eino, haba mishum yirusha eino tzarech taina. He says, I agree with Rabbi Chia, that as long as you prove the guy lived there one day, you're good. Why? Because we say, if somebody claims the property as an heir, he doesn't need a taina. Taina hudla boy, haraya boy. He doesn't need a taina, he does need a raya, to which the Gemara says, who says? Maybe he doesn't need a taina and he doesn't need a raya. And that's the key line. Alternatively, he says, a lokeach may be different from a yoresh, in that the lokeach invested in the property. And this goes a little bit back to the logic that Daniel wanted to say before. Lokeach is investing in the property. He's going to check it out first and make sure the person he's buying it from has title. Right? Today, no one buys real estate without doing a title search. I don't know if legally you're even allowed to. But the point is that we, as mind readers, understand that he for sure would have verified that this middleman had legitimate rights to it. And so we need the one day to demonstrate that. And so my point here is to say that it has to live in the real world somewhat. And we paskin, and I brought it here for you in the Shulchan Aruch and Soros Yadalid, we paskin that both the Yoresh and the Lokeach are able to claim it if they have the one day. This is also in the Rambam, by the way, in Toin Benita and Perek Yadalid, Halachas Yud Gimel and Yadalid. Okay. One more Gemara. And that is Gittin Nun Ches Amud Beis. It also supports the idea that a taina made for a Lokeach has to live in the real world. Tana Rabbanan in Source Tesvav. Lakach min ha-sikrikon va'achala shaloshanim b'fnei bailim. The sikrikon that we're referring to here are bandits. They were not Jewish, and they would come and take your property. I say not Jewish only because there is such a thing as Jewish sikrikon, the sikari as well, who come up in the classic Gemara and Gittin. But these people were gangsters, bandits. They would come along and take the property. And there were Jews who would then go and buy the land from the sikrikon. So lakach min ha-sikrikon, this Jew bought the land off the sikrikon, v'achala shaloshanim b'fnei bailim, and then he sat there for 3 years using the property. The original owners were around, they knew. V'chazer u'machar la'acher, and then he sold the property to somebody else. Ein l'bailim alokeach sheni klum. The Braisa says the original owners cannot make any claim on the second purchaser. So the Gemara says, Hechi Dami, what's your case? I don't understand. When you tell me that they can't make a claim on the second guy, that sounds like they can make a claim on the first guy. But what's going on? If they claim it, and he says, the buyer, Lokeach Sheni, says, I bought it off of you, the same rule will apply if the first buyer says, I bought it off of you. There's no difference between them. And if he doesn't say, I bought it off of you, he has no such justification. Then neither of them is going to be protected. In other words, when you bought it off of the sikrikon, right, the original owner is going to come back to you and say, hey, that's my land, right? And you say, no, before I went to the sikrikon, I paid you for it. Right? So what's the difference whether you're the guy who bought it off the sikrikon and you say that? Or you are the guy who bought it off the guy who bought it off the sikrikon and you say it? Who cares? Why is there any difference between buyer number one and buyer number two? So Amar Rav Sheshes La'olam de Lokatayin Lei. Rav Sheshes says, no, he's not saying that. He's not saying, I bought it off of you. However, in a case like this, we are willing to be towing on behalf of the Yoresh, we are willing to be towing on behalf of the Lokeach. So that works, though, only for purchaser number two. It won't work for purchaser number one. What do you mean? So Rashi says on this, in source Tes Zayin, Towing the Yoresh, Towing the Lokeach. Even within the view of Bava Basra that says that we are not towing on behalf of Lokeach or Yoresh, he says, the claim of the first guy bought it off of you. Here we do. Why? Because when somebody buys it off of a sikra cone, he knows that he's buying it off of the sikra cone. He knows that he's buying something that is an at-risk property. He would not pay for it for nothing. He must have done it, having first made an arrangement with the original owners. Tosfos here challenges and says, I don't know what you're talking about, Rashi. What do you mean, the person who doesn't believe in Tohanin? Who's the person who doesn't believe in Tohanin? So in Yudzayin, Pirsh Bukundras, Avilaman Dara Bavasin Tohanin Hachamode, Velomatina Shum Plukta. What machlokes? El Armino Periklo Yachbor, our Gemara, Tonin Le Yoresh, Tonin Le Yoresh Tanena, Tonin Le Lokech Tanena. We said it explicitly in our Gemara that we believe in Tohanin for both of them. Ukigon Zed da Omar Hachi Perusho. When the Gemara said Kigon Zed, Tonin Le Yoresh, Tonin Le Lokech, what it meant was Afilu Kigon Zed. We are Tohanin even in a case like this. Because I might have thought the original owners are right. The reason they didn't protest with the first guy is because if the gangsters hear about it, if this guy complains to the gangsters and they find out, they're going to come back and do worse to me. So he didn't say anything until number two. So therefore, your taina that you're making is a little bit weak. Nonetheless, we're willing to accept it. We're willing to accept the Taina and the Shulchan Aruch Hashemishpat Reish Lamed Vav. They paskin this as well, so long as the middleman lived there for one day. That's source Yud Ches. Clear? Okay? I apologize for belaboring it with all the different Gemaras. Maybe I didn't need to bring, you know, each of them. I just felt like they strengthened the understanding of what we're talking about. But now let's understand this, and I want to break it down into two parts. The first part is, why is Ta'aninan okay? When I just told you how neutral we try to be. And number two, how does this taina actually work? Because there are problems with the logic of the taina. Okay, everyone good? Everyone online good? Okay. So, first of all, ta'aninan is not just about yisomim and lokeach. That's not the way that ta'aninan works. Ta'aninan also applies to a gift recipient. And here I brought you the case in Source Yud Test. One of those classic old-time cases, I heard you guys talking about this before, where people have the ownership of their seat in shul, and it used to be something that people would buy and sell. Like, it was a thing. It was inherited within a family. So the story that the Rashba is dealing with here, I didn't bring the entire tshuva. The question, I think, was longer than the answer. But the story involved a situation in which there was a space in the shul. Two people owned it in partnership, and they built a bench, and they both sat there on the bench for however long they sat there on that bench, for years and years, more than 10 years. And then one of them gave away. One of them died, and his kid inherited his portion on the bench. And then the other one decided to move away, and he gave away his portion on the bench to somebody else. So now it's two replacements who are sitting on the bench for a long period of time. Until somebody comes along and says, you know, actually, you're on the wrong sides. He was on that side, he was on that side. And apparently this was a thing. Maybe there was light shining in the window at a certain time of day, and they needed the light to read, or they found that the glare would destroy. Maybe they were sitting in front of someone who was chewing gum. I have no idea. But apparently where you're sitting on this bench really, really matters. So the Rashba talks about how they used to handle these seats in shul. And he says, Yesh Miktas Mekamos, in some places, the way they do it, is that you are the private owner of your seat. It's not the community's property that they're just letting you use, but you are the owner. Shemachagam Beneim Kol Mekamos Bezakneses Chalukah Gemura, they do a complete distribution. Lezakos Kol Echad Bechelko Zechia Gemura Limkor Velasis Chomi Sheyir Tzikachol Asher Anachno Osim Po Bartzaseinu Elu. He says, the way they do it, the way we do it here in Spain, is you own your seat. You can transfer it to. Umina Doma, ki kemen hagam beforsam lefima shereisi b'ksavcha. It sounds like that's what you do there too. V'chal makam shemen hagam bekach, wherever they do that, im hechzik echad b'makam en amakamo shnei chazaka v'yasha bo kol osin shnei chazaka, if somebody takes hold of a spot and he lives there, he sits there in shul, all the years nesei for chazaka, k'derach shabalim regi and leishim v'komo seyin, as people normally sit in their seats, ubelo ira belo macha, also lo chazaka, if no one protests, he has a chazaka now on that spot. The fact that he sat there all those years shows that he legitimately received it from his predecessor. But only if he makes a taina. Avlam lo ta'anu kach. But if he doesn't make a taina, he just says, you know, I walked into shul one day and I sat here and nobody said anything. The ain't zu chazaka, that's not a chazaka. Just like bava basra memalaf amid alaka chazaka shenim atayna ain't a chazaka. The same way that the guy who's sitting in my field can't just claim that it's his now because he sat there. He has to provide an argument to justify how he got there. Aval ki imzeshu machzik bo achshav hu yoresh olokeach o mekabel matana eino tzarech taina. If you are a recipient of a gift, as well as Yoresh Lokeach, you don't need to make the argument of how you got there. Ela'af bishlotan, toin in lo, we are toin for him. So the point of this case in the Rashba is to say that it's true for a gift recipient as well, that we are toin on his behalf, because the argument is the same. Again, he didn't know the affairs of his predecessor. That's a simple way to read it. Also, the Rama brings in Kuf Mem Vav Yud in source Chaf, the same thing is true regarding a Baal Chov who is Gove Karka. I am somebody's creditor, I lend somebody money, he defaulted on the debt, I claim land of his, then somebody comes along and says, hey, that's my land, I come to Beis Din and I'm at a loss, Beis Din is able to tohen, Beis Din can claim on my behalf, this guy bought it off of you. Don't look at me, I'm new to the party. So why is it that I am able to step in and be towing? So I have already accidentally said the argument that Tosfos brings to explain why this works. This Tosfos is in Bava Kama based on the Gemara in Shavuos Daf Mem Zayin Amud Aleph. The answer is the obvious answer. He had no way to know anything. If you take a look at the Gemara in Bava Kama, Daf and Bava Amud Aleph, source Chaf Aleph, Mishnah talks about the case in which somebody's ox gored somebody else's cow. And after the attack, bless you, after the attack, they find the fetus that had been inside the cow next to it. And the question is, did it give birth before the attack, in which case the attacker is not liable for it, or did it give birth only afterwards and the damage came from the attack? So on the Gemara, on that Mishnah, first of all, the rule is he has to pay 50% for the cow and 25% for the Vlad, and basically we're splitting it. So Amar Yehuda Amar Shmuel Zo Divrei Sumchus Amar Maman Amut of Asafek Cholkin. He says, yeah, that's like Sumchus. It says you split the money that's in dispute. It would have been Chatzi Nezek, 50% only for the young, and therefore you pay 25%. Abo Chachamim Omrim Zek Klal Gadol Bedin. The Chachamim say, here comes a great big rule. Hamotzi Mechaveru Alav Araya. You want to get paid? Prove you have a right to get paid. You can't prove to me that this fetus was not born until the attack. So I'm not paying you anything. Lama Lemer Zek Klal Gadol Bedin. So the Gemara says, okay, we know Hamotzi Mechaveru Alav Araya. We've seen it all over Shas. Why did you need to precede with Zek Klal Gadol Bedin? What's that about? Itzrich. De'afilu nizak omer bari, umazik omer shema, hamotzi mechaber olav araya. It's in order to say we follow this rule, even if the victim made a definite claim, I know that this young was only born after the accident. Bari has a certain strength to it, but not strong enough. That's the Gemara. So Tosfos comments on that last line about even if the Nizak says Bari and the Mazik says Shema. Source Chav Beis. V'im Tomar, v'ha mechuyav shvua, v'ein yachal li shavahu, I don't understand. He has to swear, and he can't swear. Shezem modem emiktas benezek haparo benezek havlad omer eini yodea. He says, I don't understand. The attacker, the mazik, the mazik is mechuyav shvuya. Shavua. The mazik should have to swear because he's modem emiktas. He admits part. He admits that the cow was attacked by his ox. So why shouldn't he have to swear regarding the vlad? He can't swear regarding the vlad. And we have a rule that somebody who is chayav to swear and can't has to pay. So why isn't that what happens here? That's his question. Va'od omer ri. So we go through a whole discussion in the Gemara, and then the Ri says the following. Delo dami klal. You can't compare this case with the general mode of a mixas and person who has to swear and can't swear. He says, the source for saying that someone who's supposed to swear and can't has to pay is the Gemara in Shavuos, where they say, Shavuos Hashem tiyeh bein shnehem, where there is an obligation for an oath between two parties, it stays with them. Velo bein ayorshin, if one of them dies, his kid does not inherit the Shavua. That's a principle. Umafarish Hasam, and they explain there, such as where somebody comes to him and says, your father owed me a mana. He says, I do know he owed you 50% of a mana. I didn't think he owed you the whole thing. I don't know anything about the other half. His father would have to swear. The kid does not have to swear. Sunu, Tosfo says, why isn't the Shavua inherited? Why is it that the father would have to swear modem mixas and the kid does not have to swear? Ela ainu taima de ba'av chayav lo yedana, dahaya lo leidam chayav lo manayim lav. The reason the father has to swear is because he should know. Dude, keep track of your business. Right? What do you mean you can't swear? You think you're going to get out and based it just by saying, well, I don't know? No, that doesn't work that way. You do know, or and if you don't know, you should have known. So there. But the heirs, why should the heirs know anything about their father's business? And therefore, they don't take a shvua. So Tosfo says, the reason why heirs don't swear is because they did not need to know. It wasn't their responsibility to know. So they can say, I don't know what you're talking about. And they can be modem emiktas, and they won't have to swear. So Tosfos applies that back to our case as well. The same reason, the owner of the attacking ox doesn't have to swear, because how does he know whether the birth took place before or after the attack? He has no idea at all. So Tosfos makes the statement, and the Rush makes the statement as well. You are not responsible to know things. If you are not responsible to know things, then you get off easy. You get off easy in terms of having to swear. And the same logic is brought, you get off easy in terms of needing to make the taina. So in all of our cases that we've given so far, Yoresh, Lokeach, Mekabel Matana, Balchov Shagavakarka, in all of those cases, it wasn't your responsibility to know all the details. Yes, we think it's smart, but it's not your responsibility to know. Clear? It's a clear argument. That's what we always assume when we learn this Gemara, right? That's what I said before. It wasn't your responsibility to know. However, the Shach gives a different view. And once he says it, you're like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. And it's going to become important also later on, although probably next week. But look at what the Shach says. That's not what's going on here. It's not about that. V'hadi yorshim peturim hainu mishum delav bal dvarim did hu ela da avuhon. You want to know why the yoresh is pater? Because I'm not the litigant, says the yoresh. It's not about me. It's about the father. V'dilma I havi avuhon kayim avatoyen chamshin. Chamshin yisal chamshin yedana bevera delesal gabi. It could be if the father were here, he wouldn't have any doubts. He would say, I owe you 50. I don't owe you 50. And he would swear, and that would be that. If you're going to tell me Tosfos is svara, that where the father, shouldn't, or where the yoresh didn't need to know, he's pater. Or, in general, where you don't need to know you're pater, hadra kushala duchta, kragaba yorshin lamali. Then he says, I don't understand at all. And I was wondering about this also when I read this Tosfos. He says, then why do I need a Gemara in Shavuos at all? Why do I need to say Shavuos Hashem Tia Bein Shnehem and not the Yorshim? Who needs a pasuk? It's logic. Right? You could tell me, you boy say Masvari, you boy say Makra. But the Gemara didn't say that. Sodom, he says, obviously this isn't true. This isn't what the Gemara was thinking at all. And he says further, according to Tosfos, the pasuk is teaching me about anybody who should not have known or would not be expected to know. The Gemara just said Yorshim. The Gemara didn't say Yorshim and friends. It just said Yorshim. That's all. That's all it said. Ve'od, and further. You like that acronym? Right? He says, if you're gonna take Tosis's perspective, then sometimes you'll say, the guy who should have taken a Shavua, right, and doesn't, has to pay, upam alone, sometimes not. We're gonna need now to launch an investigation in every Beis Din hearing of, well, should he have known, or shouldn't he have known? Seriously? You're really gonna do that now? Come on. The Gemara never said that. He shows this in the Rambam in Shelo Pikado, and I didn't find it, I didn't understand how he drew it out of the Rambam, honestly, but that's a chisaron in me. But the point is, the Shach says, the logic of saying we are towing for somebody is not he didn't have an obligation to know this information. It's because he's not the Baal Din. It's not about him. So don't look to him to give you a taina. Big nafkamina, you have a general borrower who doesn't know if he repaid. Not a Yoresh Lokeach case. You have somebody who borrowed money, and he doesn't know if he repaid because of information he didn't have. It's a whole case. There was a mashko and there was a collateral. It wasn't equal to the value of the debt, or it might have been equal to the value of the debt. He didn't know the value exactly. But what's going to happen in such a case? If I take the first approach, right? If I take the approach of saying that where you didn't have any way to know, then we can be towing for you. Then this guy didn't have any way to know. That's the case without going into the black box. If you want to know more about the case, it's the Ketzos in Ayin Hei Tezayin. But if I take the first approach to how this works, so if he didn't have any way to know the value of the mashkon and whether he had repaid, then the same thing is true here. However, if the argument is you're not the Baal Davar, when the Yoresh, the Lokeach, the Mekel Matana, this person is the Baal Davar. He's the borrower. Of course he's the Baal Davar. So it matters which approach you take. And we're going to see another big nafkamina, God willing, next week. Clear? Okay. So that's in terms of why Taninan, that's in terms of why we can step in. But why should we step in? So the Sefer HaChinuch says something mind-boggling. Take a look at Source Chav Dalet. He's talking about the Pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim, Kol Amanavi Yasom Lo Se'anun. Do not oppress the widow, do not oppress the orphan. And you should deal with them nicely. And then he says, second half of Source Chav Dalet, Vod Amr Zichronim Lebracha, Shim Yesh Lam Riv Al Mshum Adam, Shabbeis Din Chayavim Liton Bishvilam Kineged HaToveya Osam. If they have a quarrel with somebody, Beis Din has to step in and argue for them. V'toanim L'Toalasim Koma Sheyach Shmish HaYach Laviyam Liton. You claim for them whatever their father could have claimed. How many ways can you argue with the Sefer HaChinuch? Right? What's wrong in this picture? Because Kalamanavi Yasom Lo Se'anun, therefore we make claims on behalf of this Yasom in Beis Din. Why doesn't this make any sense? Rabbi Yeres says it's only about Yasom and Amana. What about Lokeach? Right? What about Makabel Matana? What about all the cases we saw? Not to mention, the Gemara said nothing about being tohen for an almana. It only said it for the Yoresh. It didn't say anything about the almana. Right? And the Minchas Chinuch says, source Chafei, he says, Din zeh shayach gam b'yorshim gedolim l'kucho sh'abeithim tohenim avuram. Ayin shas. You can stop there. So one answer I think you can give is in a chanami. It's an extra lav. It's an extra chiyuv with them. Or alternatively, you could apply it to them even where the next argument will bring doesn't apply. Because the next argument is the one that everybody says, psach picha le'ilim. Maybe this teaches even where psach picha le'ilim doesn't apply, still we do this. Frankly, I'm still bothered by this argument because the idea of introducing Rachmanos into this when you have a litigant on the other side, I still don't like it, aside from all the other problems. But the general argument for doing this, for making the taina, is psach picha le'ilem, a pasuk in Mishlei, also known as a pasuk in Rashi. If you take a look at source, Chavav is a Mishnah in Ksuvas da pezayin abad aleph. Hapogemis Ksuvas lo tifra ela bishvua. Right? A case in which a woman comes to claim the ksuba, but the ksuba she acknowledges has already had part of it deducted. So the original document is no longer valid. So she has to swear. Eidech and me'idah shipura, if a witness says that it was paid off, lo tifra ela bishvua, she has to swear. And then the part that's relevant for us, if she wants to claim it from the property of the Yesomim, or property that had been sold, was bound for a debt, v'shalo b'fanav, also separate, lo tifra ela bishvua, she has to swear. So Rashi says, bishvil lekuchos, anana ta'anina, dilma ihavis gavis min halove, havatoy lach ishtabali dlo praticha, ubois ishtavue, hashta anana ta'aninan as well. He says, if she comes to claim bound property from people who bought it off of the husband, we will claim on behalf of these purchasers. Just like the husband would have said, not so fast, it was already paid off, you have to swear. So too, we're gonna claim that. Dipsach picha le'ilemu, because of the pasuk in Mishlei, open up your mouth on behalf of the mute. That's the rule. And then he goes on to say the same thing is true when claiming off of the yesomim and claiming when he's not there for the same reason. Psach picha le'ilem. And presumably this is the basis for being towing in cases beyond the ones where he lacks information, to use Tosis' argument, or where they're not really the baldover, to use the shach's argument. They like the Gemara in Shavuos, Daf Mem Aleph and Amud Aleph, and it's brought in the Shulchan Aruch and Choshen Mishpah. Look at this case in Source Chaf Ches. Haresh Shtaro Elev Zuz. There's a document that says somebody owes 1,000 Zuz. V'tan Halove Parua Kulo, and the borrower says it's all paid off. Hamava Omer Lo Nifrati El Mikzaso. The Malva says, no, you only paid me partially. Lo Yifra Es Hasha'ar. He can't claim the rest. Ela B'Shavua Ke'en Shal Tara. He has to swear. And the reason why is because, again, we demand the oath as part of psach picha le'ilem. In truth, psach picha le'ilem is the basis for a lot more than the ta'aninan case that we have here. It's a much bigger, principle. I brought you a bunch of sources, but it's 11:28. So I'm just going to show you as an outside, what we have here. First of all, I showed you the Rush in Bava Kama in Source Chavtes and the Rambam in Hilchos Sanhedrin in Source Lamed. Both say that Beis Din is meant to be a venue to save people from harm. Lahatzil Ashuk Miyad Oshko. To save the victim from those who are trying to harm him. And so in the Gemara, we say Psach Picha Le'ilem far beyond Ta'aninan. Far beyond the case of Ta'aninan. So for example, classic case in Gittin Lamed Zayin Amud Beis, where someone comes to Rav, and he has a debt that somebody owes him, but Shemitah passed, Rav would say to him, maybe you had a prosbul and you lost it. Claim you had a prosbul. What do you mean? How can you do that? Oh, psach picha le'ilem hu, says the Gemara. That's part of psach picha le'ilem. They are opening the mouth for the mute. The Yerushalmi in Source Lamed Beis has Rav Huna, who did a similar thing. Rav Huna, kad hava yada zechula barnash bedina v'lava yadale, when somebody, a litigant before him, he knew the litigant had an argument to make, but the guy didn't know his own argument, so he would start it because of the pasuk in Mishlei, psach picha le'ilem. By the way, that pasuk, just to mention, is part of Bathsheba's advice for her son Shlomo. worth noting, the beginning of Perek Lamed Aleph in Eishes Chayil is Batsheva's advice for her mother, for her son. So she says, your job is to open your mouth on behalf of the mute. And at last we get to this Ritva in Source Lamed Gimel. Remember I gave you the Gemara in Ksuvos in the beginning in which Rav Nachman helps out the girl whose mother had sold the Ksuba? So what in the world did he think he was doing? How did in the world could he justify what he was doing? So the Ritva says, I'll tell you why. It's Psach Picha Le'ilim. He says, Ein Safeki Abbas Hazos Aniyah Haisa, she was impoverished, and that's why he did it, and so on. There's more to be said about that case, but I just wanted to get there to show that to you. And this becomes based in protocol. It's 11:30, so I'm just going to tell you, if you look at Source Lamed Dalet, you see it in the Rambam. If you look at Source Lamed Hey, you see it in the Aruch HaShulchan. We say, if you see that somebody is in trouble, Psach Picha Le'ilim, you have to do it. There's only one problem, and we'll pick up with this problem next time, which is, if we have an overarching principle of Psach Picha Le'ilim, then why did you need my Mishnah and Daf Chav Gimel to teach me that we're towing? Right? Psach Picha Le'ilim. Like, why did you need any chidush about towing and Le'orei towing and Lokeach? So next time we'll start with that. Shirei Rav David. Rav David Povarsky has an answer for it. And then we'll go into the question of, okay, but how does the actual taina for the Yorish Lokeach work? What's the mechanism by which this works? And then see broader applications of this Psach Picha Le'ilim discussion. Okay? Thank you very much. Have a good Shabbos.